This is a quality news network. New evidence is surfacing regarding the terrorist bombings in the United Kingdom. Investigators say a house near the Glasgow airport was where the bombs were made. Two men suspected in the recent failed car bombings rented the house. Investigators are not revealing many details of their investigation. The British government, meanwhile, is fighting to retain its anti-terrorism powers that it says are vital to the country's security. That after the courts decided those emergency powers may still violate human rights by allowing authorities to hold suspects without convicting them. A subway derailment in London was an accident and has no ties to terrorism. It happened during rush hour traffic this morning and was likely caused by debris on the tracks. 37 people were injured. A car bomb in the Shiite area of Baghdad killed 17 people as they were posing for wedding photos. The bride and groom were wounded. A roadside bomb also killed two U.S. troops. A top Al-Qaeda leader delivers a message to America in a new 90-minute video. On the tape, Ayman al-Zawahiri insists Al-Qaeda is directly leading the insurgency against American and coalition forces in Iraq. Experts say his statements also reveal conflicts within the terrorist group itself. Recently, some Sunni insurgents separated themselves from Al-Qaeda. The Israeli military crosses into the Gaza Strip, killing 11 Palestinian militants. An Israeli army spokesperson said troops were carrying out a routine raid. Hamas leaders claim they had a right to respond to incoming fire from the Israelis. Yemeni authorities arrest dozens of suspects in Monday's suicide bombing of the Queen of Sheba Temple. They're believed to have ties to Al-Qaeda. The attack killed 7 Spanish tourists. A tense standoff is entering its third day at an Islamabad mosque in Pakistan. Authorities rejected terms for a surrender, insisting that those holed up inside release women and children they're using as human shields. The mayor of Mogadishu, Somalia, survived a second attempt on his life. That's the second attempt in 2 months. The western U.S. is baking in record hot temperatures. Las Vegas, Nevada is at 113 degrees, as is Phoenix, Arizona. And the last original member of the musical group, The Drifters, has passed away. Bill Pinkney was 81. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
A new study puts to rest the long-held myth that women talk more than men. Sampling university student conversations, researchers found men actually talk slightly more than women. The study in today's journal Science disputes unsupported statistics that are often used in magazine articles. Those statistics say that women talk 3 times more than men. And 3 swans found dead in eastern France have tested positive for bird flu. French officials have raised the country's bird flu threat from moderate to high because of that. Research in Motion has won the right to market its BlackBerry device in China, the world's largest mobile phone market. Sales in China start next month. Microsoft is extending the warranty on its Xbox 360 to 3 years. The reason? Too many problems with the hardware. Microsoft says that over the past few months it's had to make too many console repairs. And cable TV companies are raising rates for subscribers with set-top boxes. That's to help pay for new versions mandated by the FCC. Rates are estimated to increase by $2 to $3 a month. Light sweet crude oil is currently trading at $72.18 on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down 11 points at 13,565. The NASDAQ was up 12 and the S&P 500 was flat. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Christen.
on the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, GLBT America, GLBTS America, GLBTS straight, gay, bisexual, transgendered, and every one of us sexual outlaws out there. Welcome to verse 9, chapter 9, page 9, and book 9 of Strictly Confidential. I am your host, Peter Godbold, and tonight I'm serving up the homosexual agenda with grits and eggs for your dining pleasure. I couldn't be happier to have you here and to be along here with you. The GLBT version of Conversation Radio is alive and well. Thank you for making your day. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you'll find links to all of the guests as well as to our chat room and the Head On Radio Network main site. Again, that's strictlyconfidentialradio.com. The call-in numbers are, well, we're going with 304-658-5912 in West Virginia. Our Comrex system is temporarily down for the toll-free lines. It's been sent to the factory for repairs, so we're not able to take the toll-free calls. So the call-in number is 304-658-5912. Mail arrives at Peter at radionetwork.com. We'd love to hear from you. It's been an interesting week. I've been getting emails from as far away as the Netherlands and England, and I'm certainly glad to have each and every one of you along with me tonight. It's a great honor to have the whole wide world listening to the Strictly Confidential show. I hope everybody had a safe and enjoyable Independence holiday yesterday. The way things are going here, I'm begging England to take us back. I am sorry. We won't throw the tea in the harbor again. Just please help us get rid of Bush. We'll eat crumpets. We'll do anything. We'll curtsy to the... Just take us back. I am begging you. Anyway, I am all strapped in. I'm wearing my black headphones and my gold headset pro mic. You know, I look like a... Purdue Boilermaker with a Boilermaker football helmet with the gold and black. It's really an odd-looking headset contraption, but nonetheless, I'm ready to go. I was listening to Ben Birch talking to Bob Kincaid earlier, and, you know, I'm right along with him. I completely agree. There was only one thing that he said that I didn't quite agree with, and I think it depends on how you interpret it, but, you know, he was saying that he thought that, you know, that the Bush didn't really realize they were going to crash into buildings, that maybe they were just going to hijack the plane. And you know, my thought was, hell yes, he knew they were going to crash into buildings. The reports had been coming through for quite a while that they were planning on crashing into buildings. And, you know, and Ben knows that. I know he knows that. It was just a matter of phraseology. But, yes, I think that he was absolutely right, guilty all the way down the line, a high treason, punishment for that, of course, is death, and I'm ready to vote a ride along. Yes, sir, I certainly am. Oh, there's a lot to cover tonight. There's an awful lot to cover tonight. We've got so much to cover. There's music. We have a new series tonight, which I'll talk to you about later. I guess I'll talk a little bit about yesterday first. I've got to tell you, yesterday for me was a little bit depressing. You know, I was invited to several functions. There was a sister having a brunch, and there was a sister having a fish fry, and then there was this big sort of like church, cookout thing with hamburgers and fireworks and all that. But, you know, honestly, I've just gotten to the point that I'm ashamed of this country. And it's a shame, really. I remember back years ago with 4th of July celebrations and the fireworks, I remember tears welling up in my eyes, you know, the bombs bursting in air and the flag was still there and pride and caring about this country. And that's gone for me now. I'm embarrassed about this country because the fundamentalist churches are completely leaving Jesus out and preaching a message of hate. It's all about money. It's all about money. It's a church of anger and hate. You know, and who wouldn't be embarrassed? We have a president who belongs to Ben. You know, he said, God told me to strike Al-Qaeda, and I struck them, and he told me to strike Saddam, and I did, and now I'm determined to solve the problems in the Middle East. This is a man, by the way, who couldn't solve his way out of a paper sack, who's intending to solve the problems of the Middle East. Just amazing to me. Theodore Roosevelt said, patriotism means to stand by the country. It does not mean to stand by the president. And, you know, I'm ashamed of this country, too, because, you know, today, being an American, you know, who believes in participatory democracy, you know, you're criticized for that. And, you know, they tell you to move country that, you know, it's, you know, Americans used to roar like lions for liberty, but now we bleat like sheep for security. Norman Vincent Peale. It's a shame the way this has all gone down. And I hope one day we get out of it. It's just got to end. It really does have to end. One of the things I want to cover with you tonight is about Soul Force. Soul Force is a organization of Christians, mostly young gay Christians. In fact, I believe they're all gay, but a lot of them are young gay Christians. And they're what they're doing is they're traveling country in a bus, and they're setting up protests and rallies and delivering letters to some pretty impressive places. They've been to places like Bethany Lutheran College, the campus of Northwestern. They've been to Cedarville University, Yellowstone Baptist College, Brigham Young University, no less. They've been to the churches there at in Utah, the Church of the Latter-day Saints. They've been to Bob Jones University, Pepperdine, Southern Baptist churches and universities. They've been to, actually, they've been to the heart of the beast. They've been to Focus on the Family there with Dobson over in Colorado. And in each of those places, they're taunted. They have graffiti painted on the buses. They have eggs thrown at them. And all they're saying is, you know, you've got to stop hating us, that we're included too. But the religion industry is now a religion of hate, is it not? And the reason I'm bringing them up is because of something called NARTH. Now, they just recently did one of their protests at NARTH. That's N-A-R-T-H. And NARTH means the National Association for Research and Therapy Sexuality. It is one of the darkest, one of the blackest of the black universities, or doctor's offices, rather, that focuses on reparative therapy. Of course, they've been visiting Focus on the Family, the American Family Association, etc. But I'm very proud of them that they went to NARTH, because you know, NARTH is one of those organizations, along with Focus on the Family and many others, that write these tracts, these homosexual agenda tracts, whose entire purpose is to instill shame in the gay community, which is so many people end up in these ex-gay programs. I've come across a remarkable article. In fact, it comes in three parts. It's called The Heterosexual Agenda, Exposing the Myths. Now, what it is a... It is a actual tract. It's 11 pages long. But what the fellow did who wrote this, his name is Jim Burraway. What he did was he used exactly the same methodology that NARTH and Focus on the Family and the American Family Association and others used to write their anti-gay tracts. He used social sciences. He quoted only certain parts of it and went through it and put the shoe foot in this way by writing the heterosexual agenda. And the second part of it is how to write an anti-gay tract in 15 easy steps. And there's a final section called What I Learned by Writing This Parody. Now, I'm going to actually read this. I'm not going to read it to you all in one night. Now, you know, Mike Malloy reads 1984, the entire novel, night after night after night. So I'm not really going to worry about reading this to you. But I will break it up. I'm only going to read two pages per night for a little while. One of the reasons I'm doing that is, God forbid, what if someone new came into the program going on about the heterosexual agenda, they would think that I was really wired rather wrong. But I just want to keep it short so that people understand why I'm reading this, so that it enables you to understand the damage that's being done by these tracts and what's happening to people who listen to them. Before I actually get in, I'm just going to read the first two pages tonight. Before I get into it, this Soul Force has had more people talking about what it was like to go through these ex-gay treatment centers. And I have a number of audio clips that I want to go through this evening. They're actually 4, 5, 7 all together. One of them is 5 minutes long, and the others are only like a couple of minutes. Before I go into this heterosexual agenda track, I'd like to run the first tracks, the ones called Man 1, Man 2, Man 3, and Man 4, so that we can hear some statements from people who have been through this North Center where Soul Force was just recently protesting. So, Agnes, if you wouldn't mind, run the Man 1, Man 2, Man 3, Man 4.
Hi, I'm Anthony Van Brown, and I was at Australia's first ex-gay program in 1972.
And so at one point, you believed that you had actually changed your sexual orientation, is that right?
That's true, and that happened when I was 23, and I felt like I had got control of my thought life, and I felt that I had enough control to get married, which would be the next step in me becoming completely heterosexual.
And what made you finally realize that was not the case?
22 years later, after going through escape programs, 40-day fast, exorcism, 16 years of marriage, then I fell in love with a man and realized that I'd been pedaling on a stationary bike for the last 22 years, and when I got off, I was in the same place. I was still gay.
Hi, my name is Sean O'Donnell, and I spent 10 years surviving the ex-gay movement in programs such as Homosexuals Anonymous, Overcomers, Exodus, and New Hope Ministries.
So at one point you believed that you had actually changed or were changing your sexual orientation, is that right?
Yes. I especially when I was in New Hope Ministries, which is a live-in program for people struggling with same-sex attractions, there was a point actually where I thought change was possible, and I had changed. I had truly changed. I was actually attracted to one of the women in the church.
And what ultimately made you realize that change had not occurred?
Time, and I think it was my hoping too much that this would actually happen. Like, I was projecting that this was truly happening when it actually wasn't, and trying to get my own mind and heart to actually feel these feelings, which weren't really actually the feelings I was exhibiting. I was more still attracted to men. Nothing had actually changed. I was just stuffing those feelings even more and more.
My name is Jalen Braden, and I went to Desert Stream Ministries about 20 years ago.
And at one point, you actually believed that you were changing your sexual orientation, is that right?
Yeah. That would be probably about 12 years ago when I was living in Portland. I met a young woman who was very charismatic, very beautiful, just full of a lot of life and energy, and I felt like I was falling in love with her. I really had found someone who still is even, I almost feel like a soulmate. Like a life partner. I know she'll be part of my life forever. And just the dynamics of our friendship, I really believed I was falling in love with her, and which led me to believe I was finally changing. And for a while, it felt like my gay attractions were almost completely gone. Not 100%, but it felt like they were. I really believed I was on my way to healing. That was in 1985. So we went on our merry way, becoming very best friends and dating, and then another man came to my church who I fell in love with, and that's when I realized what falling in love was really like, because that was I was head over heels. It put the other situation completely, no offense to her, but it really was not, it was like holding a candle to a bonfire. I mean, it was so much different, so much more powerful, and I still struggled as an ex-gay for probably, I guess it was only about 3 more years, and that was one of the things I think that had put me on the path to finally coming out and dealing with reality was when I fell in love with him.
Hi, I'm Scott Tucker, and I'm from New York, and in 1994, I participated in the Love in Action residential program in San Rafael, California.
And so at one point, you believed that you were actually changing your sexual orientation, is that right?
Yes. And that would be when I was in the midst of the program. It's just set up to be, you're in a place where you're living by a certain set of rules and regulations, and I really went into that program thinking I'm going to obey every single rule, everything they put in front of me, because I really want to succeed. And while I was there, I really believed it was working out for me. As soon as I left, I realized that there hadn't been that much change that had taken place.
Okay, again, what we're doing here is we're going to go through three more people. And these other three were, the audio was recorded at a different location, and so the background sounds are a little bit different. But the middle one, the woman who's speaking, now we actually heard her the other evening when she was apologizing for her actions in the ex-gay ministry. But this is a different recording, and it's a little bit more personal. The reason we're doing this is because I want you to audibly meet some of these people who were influenced by these evil pamphlets that the ex-gay people are putting out. And it's really it's a profit motive. They're making a ton of money by running people through these programs. The difference with this story here, the homosexual agenda, I'm going to go through it, but at the end, what he does is he takes us through it step by step, and he shows us exactly how he did it, how he misquoted the facts, or selectively used facts to make people sound, well, sick and bad. And he does this with this particular article toward heterosexuals as if the target were heterosexuals, the heterosexual agenda. So when I read this in a minute, I'm not attacking anybody, but I think it's just important to understand how this works and what they're doing, because truly the church days and for many, many millennia has been the enemy. So we're going to run three more from the North meeting, the National Association for Research and Therapy of Homosexuality that Soul Force did. And the first and third track are probably a couple of minutes. The middle track, it runs about 5 minutes. And when we conclude that, I'm going to come back and read the first two pages of the heterosexual agenda. And by the way, I didn't mean to diminish Mike Malloy by saying, you know, I wasn't going to worry about reading this because he spent night after night reading 1984. Mike Malloy was a huge influence in my life. I love the man. He was the first progressive radio talk show host I ever heard, and he really made a remarkable difference to me. I love the man. I'm just saying, you know, I'm taking my cue from Mike. If it's okay for him to read, I can read too. So let's go into these last three tracks, North 1, North 2, and North 3. Thank you, Agnes.
My name is Daniel Gonzalez, and I'm a former patient of Dr. Joseph Nicolosi, whose office is in this building. Like so many people that seek out ex-gay therapy, I grew up in a religious setting. I grew up going to a Baptist youth group in Ventura, where I was taught many of my cultural prejudices against gay people, which is what made me want to seek out change. I had very few memories of gay people growing up. The biggest two, the first one was the HIV-positive gay man that spoke in my high school health class, and the other was one of my next-door neighbors who was struggling to reconcile his faith and sexuality and attempted suicide by lighting himself on fire. These were not the sort of impressions of gay people that taught me that being gay was a viable or fulfilling or even spiritually acceptable way to live my life. All throughout my childhood, I begged the Lord to not let me be gay, to make me straight. And so I felt like I exhausted the options having to do with my faith. But I really viewed going to Dr. Nicolosi as my last option. The psychological approach is not something that I had tried. I really believe that I was so desperate for change that I was willing to accept anything that an ex-gay group or Dr. Nicolosi would tell me. Dr. Nicolosi practices what's called reparative therapy, The idea behind reparative therapy is that there's something broken about your own sense of masculinity, and you have attractions to people of the same sex to sort of make up for that supposed brokenness. You're attracted to people that supposedly represent those things you're somehow lacking. I was in therapy for 1.5 years with Dr. Nicolosi, and in that time he only fed my continued cultural prejudice against gay people and not wanting to be gay. Because Dr. Nicolosi believes that being gay is a pathology, that there are no happy and it's not possible to be a happy and well-adjusted gay person because it is a pathology. I was so desperate for change that I convinced myself that my same-sex attractions had some alternate meaning, that they didn't mean that I was gay, that they didn't matter, that they were just part of a pathology, and thus I didn't have to be gay. But in the end, I did realize that any kind of ex-gay therapy is just an elaborate attempt to convince yourself your same-sex attractions are something other than what they really are. And also, in the end, the cost to me, I was in therapy for 1.5 years. It was at least another 1.5 years after that I was ready to come out of the closet and just accept who I was. That's 3 more years of repression. My insurance didn't cover the therapy, so that was thousands of dollars out of my parents' pockets. And most tragic is the loss of my faith. I grew up in an evangelical Baptist church. I was told you have to accept all of the Bible as it's interpreted literally or none of it. And in order to move on and come out of the closet and get on with my life, I had to leave my faith behind.
Hello, my name is Darlene Bogle. I directed an ex-gay ministry called Paraclete in Hayward, California for 10 years. However, before I was a leader, I was a seeker of healing from my homosexual orientation. From the time I was 17 years old, when my first lover committed suicide at a Christian college, I consulted therapists. I was told that my same-sex attraction was because of my history of sexual abuse and incest. I was told because I came from an alcoholic home that I had no bonding experience with my mother and father. I had started my faith journey at age 16, but I was never told that God accepted me as a lesbian woman. I spent years with different psychologists in religious counseling. I subjected myself to hours of prayer healing, renouncing my sexual contacts, and finally the casting out of demons of homosexuality. I longed to be acceptable and accepted by my faith community and to the God that I had come to know through the scriptures. By the time I was in my early 30s, after several failed attempts at being straight, I found the inner switch that turned off all of my emotion. I became a minister with the Four Square Church and began writing articles and books about my journey, declaring to the world that I was ex-gay because I had no same-sex attraction. For the next 15 years, I dedicated my life to helping others with a message of change being possible. I was the poster child for Exodus examples of those who had been delivered from their homosexual orientation. Only one thing was wrong. I had no attraction to men. I had shut off any attraction for women. And when the demons returned, I would consult a secular therapist who was not connected to the ex-gay world or Christianity, and eventually my conflicts lessened. I did not share this with any of my peers for fear of being excluded from ministry. Janelle Hallman, who is connected with NARTH, states that for trust to develop firmly, a woman will need to know that she is loved and accepted for who she is right now. The final therapeutic task in the initial stage of the work with the same-sex attracted woman is to establish the secure attachment that was lost or missing in the woman's childhood. My Christian therapist took that approach, yet years later I realized I was never accepted for who I was. I was and am a woman who is a Christian with a lesbian orientation. In 1991, I met and fell in love with a woman who had attended one of my workshops on healing of the crumpled spirit. The day we met, I knew she was God's gift to me and that I should celebrate who I was. Des and I spent 12 years growing in our faith and love for one another until her death in February of 2005 from breast cancer. But through her unconditional love, I came to experience God's unconditional love for all of his GLBT children. Our journey included several years of being alienated from my family of faith and the many friends that I had gained through Exodus. While I was in the fold, they were supportive. But when I embraced my homosexual orientation, I was excluded from fellowship in the name of God. I was asked to resign from my church position, and Des and I were isolated spiritually. Over the years, we found a family of faith in the lesbian, gay, and bisexual transgendered community, and slowly embraced Christian and gay relationships that mirrored our experience. In place of therapy that feigned trust and acceptance to move me to a place of change to be acceptable to God, I found that God loved and accepted me as a lesbian and invited me to celebrate his love. I had wondered if my relationship with Des was a spiritual fluke, but God has responded with yet another Christian woman to share my journey. Becky Lake and I have been together for 2 years and continue to grow in our love and the unconditional, loving acceptance of God. I call for Narth to speak truth and accept men and women on the basis of who they are, not what they do. I encourage them to love and embrace the inner person as God created them. I lost many years of myself trying to be what others wanted me to be. Today, I am whole, accepted, and loved by God, my partner, and a growing family of gays and lesbians, Christians, and multi-faith individuals. And for that, today I celebrate my independence from conditional acceptance. Thank you.
And I spent 10 years actually in X-Gay Ministries. I'm currently 31 years old and live in Chicago, Illinois. And I'm out here in front of the reparative therapy building where Narth is. And I spent 10 years of my life in X-Gay Ministries. At the age of 15, I started attending local 12-step groups, such as Overcomers, Homosexual Anonymous, and did receive some reparative therapy, where I did this for 5 years. And when those groups did not work, at the age of 21, I put myself through a residential live-in program called New Hope Ministries in San Rafael, California, through the umbrella organization called Exodus. Over those 10 years, I spent a great deal of time struggling and feeling much pain and spiritually and emotionally for what Exodus and the harm that they have done for me. After spending about 10 years in the X-Gay Ministries, I recently calculated how much money I spent in trying to be straight. X-Gay Counseling estimated $120 a week for 62 weeks, $6,240. The New Hope program, $865 a month for 48 months, $41,250. X-Gay books, average of $13 a book, 20 books in my library on X-Gay therapy, $260. Exodus International Conferences, I attended 6 conferences at $320. It was $1,920. And travel expenses over 4 conferences was $880, which totaled to be $50,550 over 10 years. This doesn't account for the time, energy, and health I spent in the process. Going through these X-Gay Ministries caused harm in my life. I heard the message loud and clear that I was a horrible person. I grew to hate myself and tried to take my own life. After the X-Gay experiences, I couldn't trust anyone. I especially couldn't trust the church. I had a very hard time trusting God. I didn't know where to turn. It has only been recently that I have had a self-sense again. In spite of all the bad, some good have come out of my X-Gay experiences, mainly my story. I believe that my story can help others and inspire them to try and to accept themselves. I choose to tell my story today and give people hope. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to that. I know that was a lot of stuff to go through. I felt that it's important for you to hear how these these ex-gay ministries promote this and sell this to people and the impact that it has. The fellow that you heard last there is only 31. The woman that you heard prior to that is a little old gray-haired lady who's been going through this misery her whole life. So again, I'm going to read the first two pages of The Heterosexual Agenda, Exposing the Myths, and this is written by Jim Burraway, and it is a guide to write an anti-gay tract in 15 easy steps. In writing this, he uses the same techniques that are used by these organizations like NARTH and Focus on the Family and the American Family Association to distort the truth. So here we go with pages 1 and 2 of The Heterosexual Agenda. Heterosexuals have rebelled against the norms that have held civilization together for all of human history. This rebellion has become the defining characteristic of the heterosexual community. Its members have no common language, no common religion or music or other typical unifying norms. What heterosexuals have is one thing that makes them different from everyone else: their sexual preference. Heterosexuality is becoming increasingly more difficult to ignore. It is being forced upon us through legislation, taught to our children in schools, and promoted in the powerful arts and entertainment complex. If it is true that heterosexuality has the destructive effects on the individual and society that many believe, then it behooves us to know how the enemy works and forestall any further advancement of heterosexuality by understanding what it is and what the heterosexual community is up to, how to answer their arguments in the open marketplace of ideas. Heterosexuals would have you believe that the heterosexual lifestyle is perfectly normal. They will tell you that their lifestyle choice should be the benchmark for society, but a closer look shows that their lifestyle isn't safe or desirable as the heterosexual militants say it is. Let's begin with the heterosexual ideal of chastity. Heterosexual women were historically expected to be virgins upon their wedding day, but heterosexual men always enjoyed a double standard. When Alfred Kinsey released his book, Sexual Behavior and the Human Male, in 1948, he found 53% of 25-year-old men had premarital intercourse. But when his companion book on women's sexual behavior came out in 1953, only 33% of 25-year-old women had premarital intercourse. But things had changed remarkably by 1974 when Redbook magazine conducted a national sex survey of over 100,000 women who represented the mainstream of American life. When that survey revealed that 93% of heterosexual women who married after 1973 had premarital intercourse, the authors triumphantly declared an end to the double standard. The Red Book survey was 30 years ago, and today premarital sex is probably the worst-kept secret in the heterosexual lifestyle. Despite heterosexual leaders continuing to talk about the virtues of abstinence until marriage, but heterosexuals are far from abstinence. Gay and bisexual men are 3 times more likely to be abstinent than heterosexual men over a 12-month period. When it comes to abstinence, the heterosexual agenda has clearly come up short. Heterosexuals indulge in all sorts of practices that go far beyond penal, or rather penile, it's got the jail in my head, vaginal contact. Redbook revealed that 90% of heterosexual women engage in oral penile sex. And these women reported that their sexual partners were just as eager to perform oral vaginal contact. More recently, a survey of heterosexual college students showed that 95% to 98% admitted to having had oral sex. Another survey of heterosexual men of all ages showed that more than 95% had experienced oral penile sex, and 96% engaged in oral vaginal contact. But it's not just sex. Militant heterosexual researcher Paul Cameron conducted a survey that found 36% of all men who behaved heterosexually engaged in anal intercourse with women, and 20% of women who behaved heterosexually report anal sex with men. Another survey showed that 53% of men have experienced rectal penetration during sex, i.e. by finger, vibrator, or tongue. 56% of that group did it regularly, and another 9% wanted to try it. Half of the women who participated in the Red Book survey had experienced anal sex. In terms of absolute numbers, approximately 7 times more women than gay men engage in unprotected, receptive anal intercourse. Heterosexuals are clearly obsessed with sex. It's the only thing separating them from everyone else. They single-handedly invented the sexual revolution with the introduction of the pill, and heterosexual promiscuity has become the hallmark of that sex-obsessed lifestyle ever since. According to one nationally representative study, heterosexual men aged 20 to 39 had on average 7.3 sexual partners in their still young lifetimes. Meanwhile, a parallel study of gay men over the ages of 21 found that they had averaged 4.2 partners in their lifetimes. Even though the range of ages for the gay men surveyed was far wider than those of the straight men surveyed. In 2004, a random sample poll by ABC News found that heterosexual men had an average of 29 different sexual partners in their lifetime. 39% had had sex on the first date, and 15% of men had paid for sex at some point in their lives. For single heterosexual men over 30, more than 30% had paid for sex. A 2005 Zogby International poll found that nearly 25% of men and 13% of women had more than 25 different partners in their lifetime. Their national survey found that 72% of all men who were married for 2 years or more admitted to having an extramarital affair. Only 55% of college-aged heterosexual men could even name all of their past lovers, even though they were still young. So there you have the first two pages, and this is complete with many, many photographs. There are heterosexuals in hot tubs. There are heterosexuals in scenes that look like, what is it, spring break gone wild. There's a picture of heterosexual bars. It says Hooters over the door. A picture of heterosexuals walking down the street holding hands. It's the same, only reverse. And as I said, we'll go through this over the next couple of days. I'd like you to hear it all, because at the conclusion, what we're going to do is go through and look and see how they distort facts to write this about gay folks, and they're going to teach us how to write an anti-gay tract in 15 easy steps, and it's the way it's done. Ooh, we just went on and on there, didn't we? We went past a couple of breaks. I'll tell you what, there's a lot to cover tonight. Next, we're going to get into the Dutch study. Yes, Lord, they love to quote that Dutch study. Oh, my, we're going to expose that, too. The Alliance Defense Fund Marriage Litigation Center loves to quote it, and James Kennedy, who's he's the Carl Snake guy, I believe, Christianity Today, Washington Times, they all quote the Dutch study. Well, we're going to find out what that is, and we're going to expose it for what it is. I have a couple of tracks we're going to do right now. They were sent in by more than one person, and I misplaced the first copy that was sent in. Lottie sent me these two, and thank you. It's called Homophobia by Chumbawamba, and first I'm going to ask Agnes to run the standard version, and the standard version is more of a folk song issue, and then just come back to me, Agnes. If you'd go ahead, but before you do, I'm going to quote the lyrics in case you miss it. Up behind the bus stop and the toilet off the streets, there are traces of a killing on the floor beneath your feet. Mixed in with the piss and beer are bloodstains on the floor from the boy who got his head kicked in a night or two before. Please run the standard version of Homophobia.
I mean, how do you react to something like one of the bands you name-checked in the first number that you did, obviously, Happy Mondays? I mean, Sean Ryder got a lot of stick for some of the things he said in the press. I mean, how did you interpret all that?
Well, I think, anybody who comes in for stick, I don't think it's a bad thing at all. I think it's a good thing. So when Sean Ryder came out and said that stuff, he was one of the reasons that we came out with that single.
Mm.
Because, he was lauded as a bad boy troublemaker of rock music. And yet he comes out and says, I'm not a rent boy. He goes crazy about it, smashes a bar up, issues a press release saying I'm straight. And yet he's still classed as a troublemaker. That's not causing trouble. That's been a reactionary bigot.
Up behind the bus stop in the toilets off the street, there are traces of a killing on the floor beneath your feet. Mixed in with the piss and beer are bloodstains on the floor from the boy who got his head kicked in a night or two before. Homophobia, the worst disease, you can't
of love who you want to love in times like these. Homophobia, the worst disease. You can't love who you want to love in times like these.
In the pubs, clubs and burger bars, breeding pens for pigs. Alcohol, testosterone and ignorance and fists.
Packs of hunting animals roam across the town. They find an easy victim and they punch him to the ground. Homophobia, the worst disease. You can't love who you want to love in times like these. Homophobia, the worst disease. You can't love who you want to love in times like these. The siren of the ambulance, the deadpan of the cops, chalk to mark the outline where the boy first dropped.
Beware the Holy Trinity, church and state and law. For every death the virus gets more deadly than before.
Homophobia, the worst disease. You can't love who you want to love in times like these. Homophobia, the worst disease. You can't love who you want to love in times like these. Homophobia, the worst disease. You can't love who you want to love in times like these. Homophobia, the worst disease. You can't love who you want to love in times like these.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com, your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
This is Bill O'Brien with a message that pretty much defines Concord University. It's from Emily Dickinson. There is no frigate like a book to take us lands away, nor any coursers like a page of prancing poetry. This traverse may the poorest take without oppressive toll. How frugal is the chariot that bears a human soul. Respect for learning, a mission to deliver education that touches souls, consideration to what students can afford, career rewards that pay dividends far beyond the dollars earned. At Concord, we've never crossed that important line between the business of education and education as a business. The first is extremely serious. It changes lives and connects with the moral and the spiritual. We're good at that. The second is no less serious. It raises ethical concerns, however. We avoid that. Concord University, the frugal chariot that bears human souls. Call the Concord Admissions Office, 1-888-384-5249.
As I understand the conflict right now between the president's bill and the one supported by the Democrats, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, is that John McCain and Lindsey Graham and the Democrats say that the bill, the standards we use, should be the standards that are the same as the treaty we signed, the Geneva Convention signed after World War II that every civilized nation follows. And the president is saying, that restricts me too much. That's too humane. I want to be able to do other things. I won't say what they are, but sources tell us that things like waterboarding, you know, drowning people, putting them in 50-degree weather. And the question, I think, is should we hold the United States to the same standards that England holds itself to, that Canada holds itself to, that other civilized nations hold themselves to?
Get the view from inside the Beltway with Mark Levine on the Radio Inside Scoop. Right here, 2 to 3 p.m. weekdays on the Head On Radio Network.
yes, earthquake. You know, I told us the other night that boogeree caused earthquakes back in the day. I'm not sure which century that was. Now we just caused hurricanes, and but we have caused earthquakes, so be afraid, be very afraid. I think that what I'll do is actually postpone the Dutch study, because that's a fairly long story, and we will be coming up to a top of the hour break. So what we are going to do is a follow-up on the execution of gays and lesbians in Iraq. The anti-gay activists over there have come up with a new technique. What they're doing is they're using the Internet. There's a couple of gay college kids over there, Ahmed, he's 20, and Zaid, he's 24, and the fundamentalist army used the Internet to lure them and capture them and really actually attempt to kill them. Now, what happened was they were on the Internet, and there were these army folks who were looking to kill us, posing in the gay online chat rooms, and the folks lured the gay guys into a date and made arrangements. Now, they Ahmed and Zaid had gone into the room, and once they got there, they arranged to meet the men and ask them to go out. And the dates were actually, once they met them, they were very good-looking men. They were driving a car. They talked for a while and agreed to go with them in the car. They headed toward the Al-Qurata district of Baghdad. But when they got there, the mood changed very quickly. The dates revealed themselves to be members of the army. They locked the car doors and took out guns and began beating the two. The men then drove them to a rural area. And why they didn't actually kill them, we don't know. That is normally what is done, hands chopped off, bullets in the head. Maybe they let them live in order to spread the word. It's hard to know. But Condi Rice has received a letter from Barney Frank regarding this situation. But, of course, the ill-wearing whore doesn't intend to do anything about it. The letter from Barney Frank reads, "We are writing to express our strong concern regarding recent reports that the Iraqi homosexuals have been systematically persecuted in Iraq, and there's a violent campaign led by Islamic groups and militias, and we urge the State Department to investigate, etc., etc., etc." And, of course, absolutely nothing is being done. We are going to be running a new segment over the next few nights. Now, this is courtesy of some music that has been sent in by Daryl in Chicago. Some wonderful, wonderful stuff from Club Verboten. The Forbidden Club headed right over. In any case, this is some classic music. Well, actually, the segment is to demonstrate that, yes, my dears, we did exist prior to Stonewall. The first one we're going to do a few over the next few nights, is from 1942. Now, this particular one has about a minute intro, unlike many other songs that came out along then. You know, the lyrics would start right away. There's about a minute intro. When you hear this song, you just won't believe it. But yes, my dear, we did exist before Stonewall. This particular track is called "He Wears a Pair of Silver Wings" by Eisner and his orchestra. Go ahead and run that for me. Okay, Agnes is having trouble queuing that up. Let's see if she can get it to run. If not, we'll move on to another segment. Okay, will do. We will move along to another news story, but we can't do the Dutch study. That runs just a little too long. So what we'll do... No, that one's too long. Tell you what we'll do. Let's move along to the lesbian dance track of the night. Now, this one is one I really, really love. And it's by Katie Olson. Now, she is the real deal. She was born in Arkansas, and after that, her family moved to Memphis, Tennessee, and then on to Texas. So she's as southern and as country as you could possibly get. Her intonation and pronunciation correct country words in this song are absolutely perfect. It's just perfection. She's written songs that have been performed by Dottie West and Gail Davis and Sissy Spacek, the Judds. The woman is just incredible. Katie Olson, and the lesbian track of the night is "Do Ya."
came a-coming up the hill on a man day. Oh, do you whisper my name just to bring a little comfort to you? Do you? Do you stay? What I'm asking is, do you still love me? Do you? Yes, I guess what I'm asking is, do you still love me? Do you?
But it's the next in the queue, and it's just short enough, I believe, that we can go ahead and run the news afterwards. It comes from Fort Lauderdale, and it comes in the heading of, you're not going to believe this, but Fort Lauderdale's mayor wants the city to fork out $250,000 for toilets, he claims, will put an end to gay sex that he says is rampant in the public washrooms and the beaches of Fort Lauderdale, even though the police department denies there's any such problem. Now, Nagel has spent the better part of a decade fighting what he claims to be an attempt by gays to take over Fort Lauderdale. Lord, Lord, we just can't have that. He's consistently fought all of the LGBT rights ordinances that have come before the commissioners, and now he's turning his attention to the beach. That's a favorite of gay tourists who bring millions of dollars to the city each year. But Nagel says that homosexual activity is plaguing public restrooms at the beach. Now, this is a conservative Christian. He tells the Sun Sentinel that the washrooms are pickup places for gays and that they're engaged in sex, anonymous sex, and illegal sex. And we're trying to provide a family environment here where people can take their children to the lab without having to worry about a couple of men engaged in a sex act. Now, the police department is basically speechless except to say that there is no problem with sex in the restrooms. The sergeant, Frank Sousa, tells the Sun Sentinel that it isn't a problem, and it hasn't been a problem, that there's, quote, no evidence, no reports or arrest made for any men having met and had sex in any restroom, Sousa told the newspaper. But and nevertheless, Noggle wants the city to buy portable bathrooms called RoboJohn. Now, these he wants to put them out on the beach. The RoboJohn works as you put some money in it, or at least I think you do, and the door will only stay closed for a short period of time. And according to Nagel, it isn't enough time for illegal sex. Well, I don't know where he gets all that information about how long things take. Maybe he's been riding in the New York subway and seeing the heterosexuals having sex in the New York subway, as best I can tell. These restrooms are in use in Atlanta, Seattle, New York, but not for the purpose of preventing sex. And then get this, when the doors close, they play music. Oh, please let me do the soundtrack. And turns the seat automatically. Now, you know, in Fort Lauderdale, no heterosexual couple has ever had sex outside of the marital bounds in Fort Lauderdale. No, not ever, not once. You know, it's just those gay folks. And there's some more information, too. Even though the Fort Lauderdale Police Department says it is not a problem, it hasn't been a problem, and it's going to take $250,000 of taxpayer funds to put these things up, It turns out that these people are, this particular mayor and some other people in the city council, now they are stealth candidates from Reverend James Kennedy, who's the pastor of the ultra-right-wing anti-gay Coral Ridge Presbyterian Church. And, you know, this is, you know, well, Bob refers to him as the Coral Snake Ministries. Now, he has supported three stealth candidates from his church to work in Fort Lauderdale, and there are reports saying that the mayor is being supported financially by Kennedy. So this is no doubt part of the ministry, so to speak, to make this a huge issue, and it's not an issue. But, you know, what can you expect from Florida? We've got Ann Coulter down here. We've got Rush Limbaugh down here. You know, they even took the benches away. You know, so God forbid that a homeless guy might sit down and take a nap. Just amazes me. So let's head on into the news, Agnes, and I'll meet you on the flip side. Thank you for joining us.
This is the Quality News Network. A car bomber crashed into two minivans carrying a wedding party in Baghdad today. The bride and groom were only wounded, but 17 members of their wedding party were killed. A roadside bomb-making terrorist cell in Baghdad was raided by coalition forces today. One Al-Qaeda militant died in the raid, and nine others were apprehended. Lieutenant Colonel Christopher Garber said, quote, "We're disrupting both their leadership structure and operations," end quote. The civilian death toll in Iraq has plummeted since the U.S. troop surge began. U.S. forces now have control of 40% of Baghdad. Insurgents are going after soft targets to undermine the effort. Now on the defensive, from the onslaught of the U.S. troop surge, Osama bin Laden's second-in-command has released a new video urging Muslims to work at home to topple what he calls corrupt Arab regimes and join al-Qaeda's holy war in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Somalia. In Somalia, the mayor of Mogadishu survived an attempt on his life, the second attempt in as many months. A roadside bomb exploded near a convoy he was riding in, but no one was hurt in the blast. Officials in Glasgow are trying to keep things calm. There have been 38 incidents of racially motivated physical and verbal revenge attacks on Muslims since the botched airport terminal bombing. A house located just a few miles from the airport was being used as a makeshift bomb factory to carry out terror attacks. Two of the physicians suspected in the failed London and Glasgow attacks rented the house to live in and make bombs. Yemeni authorities have rounded up dozens of al-Qaeda suspects in the suicide bombing at the Queen of Sheba temple on Monday. Seven tourists from Spain died in the attack. One of the clerics holed up inside Islamabad, Pakistan's Red Mosque compound said that he and his followers would surrender, but Pakistani authorities rejected his terms, saying he'd have to first release the women and children that are being used as human shields. 1,100 militants have given up thus far. The U.S.-backed military effort to oust the others is being praised by Pakistanis, who resent the head cleric for trying to impose Taliban-style rule on their citizenry. The western United States is enduring an excessive heat wave with record-breaking temps in normally hot regions. Movie houses and casinos in Las Vegas are seeing more people linger longer than usual. The heat wave will be in effect until 9 o'clock tomorrow night. More next.
Terry's Lounge at the Cypress Inn in downtown Carmel invites you to a great evening of your favorite foods, beverages, and live music Thursday through Saturday, featuring Dick Whittington and friends from 6 to 9:30. Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn features an appetizer-sized menu and our famous burger, salad, and fries. Afternoon tea, a great local tradition, is served from 1 to 4 p.m. daily by reservation. Sunday evenings are special as Richard Divnick entertains from 5 to 8 p.m. with classical renditions of pop, jazz, and classical music. Join the fun, food, and music at Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn, corner of Lincoln and 7th. In downtown Carmel.
A new study puts to rest the long-held myth that women talk more than men. Sampling University of Arizona student conversations, researchers found men actually talk slightly more than women. The study disputes the common folklore that say women talk three times more than men. The owner of Arby's, billionaire investor Nelson Peltz, is looking at buying Wendy's, the third largest hamburger chain. Wendy's has 6,000 stores in the U.S. and abroad. Fidelity National Information Services reports that one of its employees at its Certegy Check Services subsidiary stole 2.3 million consumer records that contained bank account and credit card information. The thief sold the information to a data broker who sold it to several direct marketing companies, but the info was not used in identity theft. Microsoft is extending the warranty on its Xbox 360 to 3 years. The reason? Too many problems with the hardware. Microsoft says that over the past few months, it's had to make too many console repairs. The $1 billion cost of the extension has not had an effect on Microsoft shares. Oil is trading at $72.14 a barrel. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow is down 11 points and the NASDAQ was up 12 at 26.56. The S&P 500 was flat. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Michael Coleman.
And he's back, riding across America on a horse named Strictly Confidential. A man who knows his way around a pair of chaps. Here's your host, Peter Godbold.
Welcome back to the second hour of Strictly Confidential. I'm your host, Peter Godbold, and you are welcome to give a call anytime at area code 304-658-5912 in West Virginia. Email comes in to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. We'd love to hear from you. Agnes did get the track, the one we're trying to run earlier, fixed up, so we're going to run that soon. Before we do that, though, I'd like to get into that Dutch study that I've mentioned several times to you. This study is quoted over and over and over again by the right-wing fundies to put down gay marriage. Now, according to the Dutch study, same-sex partnerships for young men are temporary at best, and men in steady partnerships have an average of 8 partners per year aside from their main partner. Now, a quote from Dr. James Kennedy of the Carl Stake Ministries, what does a homosexual marriage look like? Well, the longest term we have available to look at is in the Netherlands. Researchers found that the average marriage between two men lasts 1.5 years. Furthermore, during that time, the men have 8 or more sexual partners. Then we've got Christianity Today, quoting the Dutch study, says a study from the Netherlands where gay marriage is legal found that even among stable homosexual partners, men have an average of 8 partners per year outside of their monogamous relationships. And from the Washington Times, a recent study on homosexual relationships finds that they last 1.5 years, and even as homosexual groups are pushing nationwide to legalize same-sex marriages, this is going on. The study of young Dutch homosexual men by Dr. Zerdu of the Amsterdam Municipal Health Services, published in May in the journal AIDS, found that men in homosexual relationships on average have, and you guessed it, 8 partners per year outside of their relationships. Well, let's just get to the truth of that little situation there. What you're reading is, of course, BS. Here's the way that they managed to twist that up. You're thinking, when you hear stuff like that, what you're imagining is that you're hearing stuff from the broad-based general population in the Netherlands studying homosexual behavior and gay relationships. But that would be wrong. What the Dutch study was, as it turns out, it was performed by a team of researchers led by the doctor that appeared in May of 2003 in the journal AIDS. And what was the title of that study? The study was called The Contribution of Steady and Casual Partnerships in the Incidence of HIV Infection Among Homosexual Men in Amsterdam. Now, what they did was they based their research studies of HIV-infected and AIDS-infected, almost exclusively homosexual active men in 1984. And now the protocols have changed over the years during this survey. And from 84 to 85, it was gay men aged 18 to 65 with at least two sexual partners in the previous 6 months. In other words, monogamous partners were explicitly excluded from this survey. In 85 to 88, as the study continued, it was everyone except HIV negative men were now excluded, and only HIV positive were added. Then from February 88 to December of 88, the study was reopened to HIV negative men. There are also variants for several other years, but nobody was outside of Amsterdam was accepted into the study, and the study was exclusively an urban one. So what do we have here? What we have is a population that was heavily weighted with HIV AIDS patients. It excluded monogamous participants. It was predominantly urban, and it was predominantly under the age of 30. So this population was perfectly good for an HIV study. It in no way is representative of Amsterdam's gay men, let alone gay men anywhere else. It ought to be a very common tactic amongst the anti-gay extremists, because they're eager to, you know, portray this scientific research as, because it backed, it's just like they do the Bible. They cherry-pick the verses, they cherry-pick research, and it's research that's not really done to support what they're, in other words, they're trying to pull facts that are not really fact relevant to what they're talking about. They found that, the religious right is very fond of HIV studies and other sexually transmitted diseases, because they can usually count on those to provide really juicy statistics about what homosexuals do. Of course, it doesn't have anything to do with what homosexuals do. We're talking about going to STD clinics and they've picked up a disease. So it's just the standard well-worn track. There's a logical fallacy here. Let's look at it claim by claim. They claim that the study was of homosexual relationships between married homosexual men. Okay, the study was not about homosexual relationships. The authors were doctors and epidemiologists, and they studied how diseases pass from one person to the next. The research article presented a mathematical model, and it was intended to predict how HIV and AIDS among gay men. Of course, if the couple is monogamous, then the definition they would be contributing to the spread of HIV and AIDS, it goes out the window. So monogamous couples were ruled out of the study. They were explicitly ruled out. There's another claim number two, that homosexual relationships last for an average of 1.5 years, making same-sex marriages short-lived. Well, the first problem here is that anyone over the age of 30 was excluded by the study. So if you keep the sample at a low age, under 30, it artificially limits the length of time that anybody could have been in a steady relationship, and you're certainly not going to find any 29-year-olds in 30-year relationships, 15-year relationships. As it goes on, there are also, there's just a lot to it. 1.2, says that men in homosexual relationships on average have 8 partners a year outside of their relationships. And here the authors are quoting that their study, it's an average study. They never tried to claim it was true for gay men as a whole, because the study excluded monogamous couples. What's more, we don't know how the average was skewed, because we don't know how many monogamous couples were excluded. The only thing that you can conclude from this study is that people who are non-monogamous decide to be really non-monogamous. Other than that, it's useless. Yet these statistics are quoted regularly amongst the right-wingers as the Dutch study. So there you have it. The next time you see the Dutch study referred to, they're talking about non-monogamous, unmarried gay folks. In fact, this study started before gay marriage was even... They're referring to everybody as being married, but gay marriage wasn't even legal there when this study started out. We have a caller. We have Jim with us on the phone. And Jim, welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us.
Good evening, Peter. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing okay, Jim. I was just a little disgusted over, I just didn't have a real good feeling about July the 4th, and the news is all gloom and doom. You know, everybody's beating us up, and some days it's just easier to take this mess than others. You know what I mean?
Well, I can appreciate your gloom and doom about this week, but unfortunately this week I lost my mother.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Okay.
I really am. I've lost mine also.
Yeah. but it happened this week, and it's been kind of hard to deal with. So I've been listening to your program, and I think the dialogue is good. I think it's ecumenical in its approach, and I think it's going to bring in a significant listening base. And I just wanted to suggest a few musical things, if I may.
Sure. Well, we certainly loved your pick the other night.
Well, I'll tell you, you ought to try that band called Erasure.
A lot of people are talking to me about Erasure.
Yeah, they put on a good show.
I've
seen a lot of their... I have a DVD with a concert they did in Manchester. And they certainly, if you like electronics and things of that nature, and good lyrics, it's very good. And sort of in honor of my mom, her favorite composer of music of her day was Cole Porter.
Yes.
And a lot of people don't realize this, but a lot of the songs that Cole wrote were not for women. And,
interesting.
You know, if you could try some songs like Night and Day, for example, In the Still of the Night, Anything Goes, wonderful thing from the 20s. And I think
I do remember some of the
my humble suggestion
I do remember
even
some
further broaden your ever widening musical base has that.
That sounds wonderful, Jim. I'm not sure if I have any Cole Porter on cue for the night that I've already sent to the studio, but I'll be perfectly honest with you. I could certainly lay my hands on it.
Well,
and I would love to play something like that in her honor.
If you could find Night and Day in memory of my mom,
well,
I really appreciate it at some point.
Well, Jim, has the funeral already taken place, or is it still in that awkward in the middle stage?
That's a conflict.
I see.
But anyway,
well, I'm off. Sorry.
I remember when
it happened. My dad died when I was 19, so that was an awfully long time ago. But my mom passed away at about 2000, and that was huge. She was in very poor health, but nonetheless, even when you maybe somewhat kind of expect it, it's still huge. And I'm awfully sorry that you're going through that. It's very tough.
Well, there's great comfort in the fact that I know that God would not deny interest to someone who was so blithe to go to Him. And that's a source of great comfort.
Yes. Do you have other family there, Jim? Do you have other family there with you?
Not at this time, but I have the Shady Lady and Rupert Brooke, two beautiful cats.
Yes, you do. Cats are amazing. I've had several cats over the years. I have a doggie now, but I remember them all well. They were all great friends.
They really were. And once a cat decides to allow you to enter their world, it's really a signal on it. But here again, I wish you luck with your program, and perhaps you could dig up some Cole Porter and stuff like that. And just that man was probably the most brilliant lyricist as well as songwriter and composer who ever lived. Just a rich kid from Peru, Indiana. That's where he was from.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. And the movie,
you always expect these people.
The Lovely is okay. The one that Cary Grant did, Night and Day, was okay. But Cole Porter was, I don't know, one of the first people that I listened to when I was growing up, and it was through my mother's influence that I became such a devotee of his work. and the contributions that man made to the American theater are without question unfathomable. They really are. And
well, I have to say that your mother certainly raised someone who has the courage of their convictions. The things that you say you stick behind them and you defend your points well. I've heard you for a long, long time. Some of my new listeners have no idea who you are. But I will say that over the time that I've heard you, when you believe something, you back it up, and you don't take things lightly. I will say that for you. And I think
Thank
that
you
probably
much.
Your mother had
a
huge influence about those things.
And that statement right there does a great deal to make me feel a lot better at this sort of rough time. Okay? And,
yes.
You know, God bless you all.
God bless you, too. God bless you, too. And we will definitely have some Cole Porter for you by tomorrow night if I have to fly it in from somewhere. God bless you, Jeff.
All right, sir.
Good night. Oh, that's a tough thing to go through. I remember it. I remember that. Yes, the loss of a mom is very difficult. I think at this point what we'll do is go ahead and we'll attempt to run that the segment. We're going to be running it over the next several nights. Our proof that we existed before Stonewall segment, and tonight's segment, again, is He Wears a Pair of Silver Wings. It's done by Kay Kreisner and his orchestra from 1942. Now, unlike most songs along that era, the lyrics don't start immediately. Most of them do. The lyric 1 minute in, and kids, you got to hear this. This is the first of a series that we're going to do as proof we existed before Stonewall, and it was sent to us by Daryl. So, Agnes, let's give that a shot again and see if that little sucker will run.
Say he's just a crazy guy. To me, he means a million other things. For he's the one who taught this happy heart of mine to fly. He wears a pair of silver wings. And though it's pretty tough, the job he does above, I wouldn't have him change it for a king's. An ordinary fellow in a uniform I love, he wears a pair of silver wings. Why, I'm so full of pride when we go walking. Every time he's home on leave, with those wings on his tunic, and me with my heart on my sleeve. But when I'm left alone and we are far apart, I sometimes wonder what tomorrow brings. For I adore that crazy guy who taught my happy heart to wear a pair of silver wings. For I adore that crazy
crazy guy who taught my happy heart to wear a pair of silver wings.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Wednesday night prayer meeting on Head On with Bob Kincaid opens up a whole new realm of spirituality. Touch others. Reach out and touch faith. Join Brother Bob every Wednesday night for prayer meeting services here in the Tabernacle of Common Sense. Only on the Head On Radio Network and chat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com.
Yoo-hoo.
Hello. Hey, Al.
Excuse me, sir. Mr. Gore.
Hello.
Hey, Al. It's the Vice President.
Mr. Gore, we need you for president.
We deserve a president we can respect.
We deserve a president we can respect. Who has experience.
And compassion.
Who is the most qualified.
Who is a proven leader.
Al Gore. Right on Iraq. Right on global warming. Right for the 21st century.
Join us at DraftGore.com and supporting Al Gore for the Democratic nomination for president.
Sign the petition at DraftGore.com.
Paid for by the committee to draft Gore. He won once. He can win again.
That's the Big Dipper over there.
Yellow and blue make green.
Well, a cow pie really isn't a pie.
Come on, Press! Open your eyes!
Remember, you're always teaching. Teach carefully. React with rage and kids will learn it's okay to do the same. Keep your cool and kids will do likewise. For advice, visit actagainstviolence.org. Brought to you by MetLife Foundation, National Association for the Education of Young Children, and the Ad Council.
Couldn't resist sending that up today as a back from break track. That is just a fabulous song. Very underplayed, very underrated. Love that song. I have a news flash that was sent in just before it started, and I just can't resist telling you about this. The prince of a royal family is just shocked the entire nation. The prince of Rajpipla could become the first openly gay Indian royal. Yes, Singhali, he grew up in a bubble of prestige and privilege, and he was surrounded by hangers-on. He was treated reverently. He was treated so well that he was 15 before they'd even let him cross a street by himself. He says he was born with a golden spoon. He's now 41 years old, and he lives a luxurious... At one point, there were almost 22 servants. Even a sip of water, the servants got that for him. He's used to living a life of luxury, but he was also living a lie. He was hiding a secret that was so taboo that it caused riots in the streets of India. Yes, riots. Singhali is a prince the son of a Maharaja, Indian royalty from a dynasty that's more than 600 years old. And today, though India is a democracy, Singhalis are still honored as if they rule the land. Well, he was a good student. He went to boarding schools. He took lavish vacations with his family. He studied law and business when he was in college. He entered into an arranged marriage, though. That's the way things are done there, with a beautiful Indian princess. And it marked the union of two very prominent royal Indian families. When he was asked to describe that marriage, Singhali said, "It was the worst decision of my life. It was a total disaster, a total failure. I never had any sexual or physical attraction toward her. Nothing worked. The marriage was never consummated. And I had realized then I had done something very, very wrong." And he was married for 15 months. It was a disaster, a disastrous marriage. He divorced her, and when he did, she said that he took to heart. What she said to him was, "I'm giving you a piece of advice." I just bet she did. "I'm giving you a piece of advice, honey. Please don't spoil another girl's life." Anyway, the prince says that sort of hit him directly in his heart. He decided he wasn't going to get married again. But in keeping with Indian tradition, the king and queen decided it was time to find another wife for their only son. He was reluctant that he had really no one to share his feelings with. I mean, who could he talk to? And he was feeling like it was all falling apart. He had a nervous breakdown. He wound up at a mental hospital. And when he started talking to a therapist there about his long secret, things began to change for him. He admitted to the therapist that when he was growing up, he was always attracted to men. He said that his grandmother had actually sponsored a young boy when he was a kid who was orphaned, and for him to be a companion to the fellow. And they experimented and do what, little gay boys do. And, you know, he said they liked playing with each other's bodies, et cetera, et cetera. And Singhali was eventually introduced to a fellow named Kavi, who's a former reporter. He made waves in 1986 by becoming the first openly gay man in India, just not done over there. So for many years, he was the only person in the entire country to speak out about homosexuality. After becoming close friends, the Kavi fellow convinced Singhali that his sexual orientation was nothing to be ashamed of. He said, I told him, you just live your life honestly and as possible, and you try not to hurt people, and you just live quietly, and you do what you think is right. Sounds like good advice to me. Singhali took his advice last March, and he gave an interview to a local newspaper and outed himself as a homosexual. Well, honey, the brown hit the fan at that point. Oh, Lord, it was a possible situation. They cut pictures from the newspapers that he was interviewed in, set bonfires to his pictures. They declared me dead. You know, over there in India, homosexuality is against the law. You could be penalized with 10 years. I mean, we're talking 10 years in prison. And so Singhali's become the voice in the faces of those people who've been persecuted for their sexual orientation for a long, long time. And so not only has the prince been publicly, he's publicly fallen from grace, his mother's publicly disowned him, and he's placed the kingship, the next king, that's in jeopardy now. He's the only son of the king and queen, and Singhali's their only throne. So the father is saying it's not natural. Anything which is not natural is something you can't do, you can't procreate, you can't have children, blah, 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 blah. Haven't we heard it all before? And he says, there'll be no life on the earth. You know, if one son is gay, it's going to stop life on earth. Yeah, right. So anyway, he came out, and it was met with disappointment and outrage. But he's taken up his cause as educating people about homosexuality and HIV and AIDS. He came out to the newspaper because, you know, basically he wanted to show the world that even a prince can be gay. And he wanted people to discuss homosexuality, which is always where things start breaking. You know, as long as we're in the closet and we don't say anything, they can keep the status quo. But once it starts getting talked about, it all falls down for them because there is no logical argument to keep us down and to not give us our rights. It's always been a taboo in India, though, and no one wanted to talk about it. So gay activists, by the way, are saying that 80% of gay Indian men are married to women, and there's widespread denial of homosexuality, and it blocks the education of safe sex practices, resulting in a very high rate of HIV and AIDS in the gay population, because they're having secret multiple partners because they have to maintain their marriage situation. He says it's high time we talked about HIV and homosexuality, and unless we do, there's going to be no awareness. And he says my purpose of coming out is because it's a good cause for the control of HIV. So he's dedicating all his time for that, and his future is uncertain. And if he ever does take his place in the throne, it's going to be on his own terms, damn it. He says as the first openly gay Indian royal of the 21st century. Well, I got to hand it to you, honey. I mean, you've got the keys to the kingdom, billions of dollars, no doubt, 22 servants, and you're risking it all yourself. There's a lot of good in that. I appreciate that. What a great story. Thank you for sending that in, News Ninja. Our News Ninjas are really good about that. The telephone number is 304-658-5912 here on a Strictly Confidential. Gay and homeless. This is a difficult article to do. I'm hoping that in a few days we're going to have a representative from the National Gay Task Force who helps with this sort of thing, but for right now they're not scheduled at this point. But being a teenager is very difficult for all of us. It's not easy for anyone growing up, excluding gay people. You've got to deal with individuality versus the community and independence and dating rituals and juvenile friendships and support networks and on and on and on. But most kids, they're trying to get their driver's license. But let's talk about Scott. He has a special concern other than getting a driver's license. He doesn't know where he's going to be sleeping tonight. When Scott was 15, he and his family were evicted from their house because of his mother's partying. She didn't really care much about him, apparently. They moved from one motel to another until his aunt told him, his aunt and uncle actually told him, that he could stay with them at their home. Found out that Scott was gay, out. Nope, you cannot stay here. They told him to get out of the house. So Scott went online and tried to find some help, and what Scott found was an anonymous man who said he would take him in, and Scott was picked up by the man that night and moved in with him. And get this, in only a couple of weeks, his mother signed over legal guardianship to this stranger, this man who picked him up over the Internet. And Scott says that after that, things got very, very scary with the new, quote, guardian. He wanted to get his GED, but the guy wouldn't let him out of the house. He was threatened. When Scott finally did get away, had to leave his stuff there, he got away with the clothes in his back. His computer was left, his bed, his stereo, his camera. The guy followed him to work and told him he was going to make his life miserable. Scott tells this story very stoically, and he tries to keep the emotions, in his core, but it's a very sad thing. And the problem is that his situation is anything but isolated. Most homeless gay kids aren't going to share the details of their experience with strangers, especially the press. They don't want to go on record with it, and when they do, it just adds to the volume of horrors. Analysts say that, I'm looking at another reference here, that I found that between 20% and 40% of all homeless youth identify themselves as lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgendered. That's from the U.S. Department of Health. And that has a lot to do with families kicking him to the curb. And I will tell you that the religion that is the hardest on that, nope, it's not the Baptists. It's the Mormons. I cannot begin to tell you how many Mormons I have met who were kicked out when they were teenagers. Mormons just don't truck with it. It's very difficult to grow up Mormon. The states and the government, they put all these emphasis on family values, but, they don't even want to know that this problem exists. They don't even want to hear anything about gay kids. Utah, well, let's talk about Utah. They're just openly resistant to even there's any such thing as a gay kid. And you begin to see why homeless kids are especially are disenfranchised, and it's a huge problem. It's a close relationship between homelessness and sexual orientation. 26% of gay kids nationally are forced to leave home because of conflicts with their families and over their sexual identities, and 42% of homeless youth, again, identify themselves as gays and lesbian. In Utah, there's no services or programs, either private or state-run, specifically to address this issue. And, most of the time, what you find is kids helping other kids. You know, their kids, they'll take on a job and two kids will get a motel room and they'll sneak their friends in after dark, or they'll buy an old beat up car for $100 and that's their home. They try to protect each other. They're the only things that they have. But if you're a youth and you're new to the street and you don't know where to look, it's a very serious situation. There's a lot of danger in falling victim to someone who's offering to help you. And often their motives are less than... there's one guy that roams around in Utah, and he's well known on the streets as a sexual predator, but the new people, they don't know about him. What he does, he gets on the street, he looks for boys and girls, always runaways, and he offers them a place to stay and food, and the kids have been around, they know him, but the new ones fall for it. He takes them to their apartment, and then he tells them that if they don't have sex with him, he'll call the police and have them arrested for what? Vagrancy, for robbing him, he'll make something up, for any number of reasons, but he threatens them with that. And, citizens can obtain information about registered sex offenders fairly easily, but not with homeless youth. So the predators are continuing to thrive out there. They don't care about the law, they don't care about a damn thing, they don't care about the kids. So really there is a crisis situation for LGBT youth, and there are special risk factors for LGBT kids. They include suicide. Gay kids are 2 to 3 times more likely than their straight peers to attempt suicide. There's, of course, verbal harassment, physical assault, exposure to sexually transmitted disease from something called survival sex. Survival sex is, I don't need to explain it, you know what that is, we're all adults here. It's estimated that kids under 25 represent one half of the 40,000 new HIV cases in the United States. And interestingly enough, Utah, where the vast majority of these kids are getting kicked out, thank you, Mormons, the rate there is where did the number go? 40% higher, was that it? That in Utah, it's actually twice percent, 50% higher. In Utah, the average of kids getting AIDS after getting kicked out is 50% higher than the national average. Way to go, Utah. The National Gay and Lesbian Task Force says that estimated that up to a half of the youth are forced to leave home early because of this sort of thing, and drug abuse is a huge issue also. The state has lots of money from a tobacco settlement, and looks like they could spend some of the money to help kids like that, but, they just want to deny the problem. We've got a fellow named Adam. He's 16. In March, his father was released from jail, but when he got home, the dad got home, he beat up his mother because she was in another relationship, and Adam and his 11-year-old brother, they left home, and they called the cops, and he didn't think his brother would see that. So he went to stay with a friend. The friend was Mark, but his mother didn't know that Adam was gay, and so when she found out he was gay, Mark's mother kicked him out. So he got kicked out again. She told him she hates gay people and she hates the way they live, and get the hell out of my house. And then her son Mark started harassing him. And, you got to hand it to this kid. He made posters for Gay Pride Day, this kid, Adam, 16. He used all of his photographs he had taken, over the years. And this kid, Mark, whose mother kicked him out, tore up all the pictures and burned them, before the Gay Pride Parade. It really just breaks my heart. I mean, the kid's home got his damn pictures, and that's what he's, it's a sad situation. So Adam's concerned about finding a place to live. We got Christopher. He's 19. Now, he's an honor student, and he was the high school valedictorian. Now Christopher's scrambling for a place to live and desperate to keep from landing on the streets. His only mistake was because he came out to his devoutly Latter-day Saints family. His parents disowned him at the advice of the bishop. Now, isn't that just wonderful? The parents go to the bishop and says, oh, what do we do? What do we do? And the bishop says, throw him out on the streets. Now, the Latter-day Saints call that some sort of tough love. Jesus Christ. Tough love. So anyway, this kid, Christopher, is 19. He's trying to find someone who doesn't drink, who doesn't do drugs, and wasn't promiscuous. He was looking for somebody who was raised LDS like himself. And, he moved in with somebody who said he met those criteria, but it turned out he did drink and he did do drugs, so he moved out, and right now he's living with the parents of a friend of his. And but the neighbors have figured out that he's gay, and they're starting asking questions, and so the mother gave him a month to move out because she didn't want anybody to think her kid was gay or that she was helped. See, you can't help gay people openly in Utah, not and live there. All Christopher wants is an education. He says, God bless him, he says, my spirit isn't broken. I still... 4 weeks after that, Christopher had a heart attack. The doctors say it was from stress. A 19-year-old we're talking about. He has no health insurance, and he doesn't know how he's going to pay the bills. Peter, 21. He had to start his life over after his parents threw him out when he was 18. With only the clothes on his back, they threw him out. And why? Because Peter didn't want to go on one of those LDS missions where they ride around the country on, in their black pants and white shirts and black ties and bicycles. You know, he was gay. He said he didn't fit in. He didn't want to do that. And so they threw him out, but he says, I'd rather be homeless than live a lie. Like the we just talked about, he'd rather lose all that than live a lie. It's amazing what it means to people to just be who they are. He said he hadn't seen his mother in so long he doesn't even know what she looks like anymore. Hasn't spoken with them on the phone except for once in 3 years. We got John, he's 20, he's a friendly fellow, he has a job, and he shares a downtown apartment with three other guys that he's trying to help. He says his stepfather beat him with leather belts for 12 years, but then he got really mean when he found out I was gay. Can you imagine? Damn these people. I mean, you know, they do their polygamy, and their high, you know, their churches look like something out of Disney World. I mean, it's just so ornate. You know, it's all about it's nothing substance, nothing personal, though. You can't love a gay kid. I am so sick of what religions have done to us over the centuries. You know, may God forgive them. I can't. Of course, I'm not God. So anyway, John's stepfather brought a guy home to meet him. It turns out he was from some rehab center called Evergreen, and for 6 hours the guy browbeat him, telling him he was going to get AIDS and die. And so anyway, John went to the Evergreen, and then they told him he was cured in 16 days. Bingo, he's cured. And then when, of course, it turned out he wasn't cured, he was kicked out again. And when he tells the story, the words get stuck in his throat. But he says, it's been years and I keep telling myself that it's going to be okay. But when he tries to tell the story, the words get stuck in his throat. What we are doing to the children in the name of the Old Testament is just horrifying. I never, never, never planned it. Never will. We have a very long story that I wanted to do, but I think I may be running out of time. I'll probably do that tomorrow night. I'll do a shorter one. Remember my guy, Michael Glatz, the young gay magazine guy who just decided that, you know, he was going to go ex-gay, and then he discovered that he was, you know, he couldn't live the gay lifestyle, blah, 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 blah. So anyway, this newly minted ex-gay guy, and there's a woman involved too, her name's Charlene Colfer, and she publishes Venus Magazine. So anyway, they both have jumped into the spotlight. What it boils down to is that there's more money in being, you know, the poster boy for the ex-gay movement. And it's interesting that both these people, the woman and Gladys, they found God and renounced their homosexuality shortly after they split up with their partners. And, you know, what they're trying to do really is one partner is trying to punish the other partner by becoming an ex-gay. Unbelievable. You know, the conversion occurred for the woman after she split up with her life partner of 10 years, and she waited for 3 years before, you know, finally she figured out it was not going to happen. They were not going to get back together. So, poof, as if by... she's suddenly going to be born again and healed. And so they're doing these these anti-gay speeches on the, you know, all the Christian channels, and the photographers are following them around, and you know, instead of, you know, just, you know, checking out new dates and going out with new people, what they did was they just blamed their personal failures on homosexuality. You know, most people get dumped. You know, they'll go out and have a few drinks at a bar and look for another partner and, you know, get over it. But they're trying to say that the problem was homosexuality, and they, you know. The opposite of homosexuality, by the way, is not heterosexuality for ex-gays. It's a lot of loneliness and despair. And The woman says she's physically attracted to the Spirit of Christ now. But Glatz suggests that he's saying he's not having any luck finding anybody of the opposite sex, but that healing takes a long, long time. You know, it's just going to take long enough for him to make all the money and get all the accolades and, you know, just another money-grubbing whore. This is not sincere. It's not sincere at all. Catherine, the woman, she's saying that it's the work of the devil, blah, 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 blah. You know, and they talk about the lifestyle, you know, staying up late night and party. What they want to pretend is people built the damn meth labs. Yeah, that's what it is. You know, when a straight person snorts a line, it's a personal sin. But when a gay person does the exact same thing, no, 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 that's a lifestyle. Yeah, we all know how they play that game, don't we? It's disgusting. So the woman is also saying, I've known many Muslims who were firm about what they believe, but when they got sick and they were given 6 months at death's door, they suddenly pushed that Muslim stuff to the side and said, what must I do to be saved? So what's she doing? Is she like hanging out at a Muslim hospice? Tracking last minutes of the Muslims' lives and watching their conversions? Oh, Lord, it's ridiculous. We have just a few more minutes before closing. I wanted to follow up on that story that we did the other week about how the bullying's going in England. You know, now that they've been publicly humiliated worldwide by that story about how gay kids are being beaten up so badly in public schools in England, now the Department of Children and Family Services over there is, oh, they're changing their mind. No, 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 bullying's not a part of growing up. We're going to fix this. We're going to call this in the schools against homophobia. Boy, that's just amazing what a little publicity will do, won't it? And speaking of publicity, I do want to mention the lesbian who was just awarded $6.2 million in a firefighter settlement. You know, she was harassed because she was a black lesbian. She's due back in court today for additional punitive damages. And the city is saying, oh, this is awful. We're just being hit in the budget, and we can't afford this, and it's just awful. And the city is saying it's beyond the ability to change the past. Well, it may be beyond your ability to change the past, but somehow sure the hell changes the future awfully damn fast, doesn't it? You go, girl. You spend your $6.2 million. She may even get more because there are other personal suits. Good for her. I'm glad to hear it. Glad to hear it. Also wanted to mention this. You know, another Anglican group is split off, which is not really news. They're doing it every day over this gay thing. But what is interesting is some of the Anglican groups, when they split off from the church over homosexuality, they try to take the property with them. they want the buildings. Yeah, we want the real estate. It's ours. But the courts are ruling against them. These split-off groups have to give the buildings back to the Anglican Church. Way to go. I am glad to hear it. And remember when we talked, well, I wasn't on this show. I think it was on Bob, called Bob's Show. Remember when Walmart, the National Gay, Lesbian, and Chamber of Commerce joined Walmart? Or they formed a partnership with Walmart? And they said there was going to be an ongoing commitment to the advancement of diversity among the associates and the suppliers and the customer base. Typical Walmart BS. They're not going to renew the relationship in 2008. The party is over. They're going to continue to hold dialogues with Walmart as it seeks to educate the associates and the stakeholders about the importance of LGBT employers and suppliers. So obviously you read between the lines on that one, and you find out very quickly that what that was about was Walmart wanting the gay dollars by hooking up with the National Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce. I thought that was a bad idea when I heard it. Took the Chamber of Commerce, though. But, you know, Walmart was pumping in a whole bunch of money, you know, so those things happen. Oh, me. I guess what we'll do is the articles that are left here to discuss with you guys are a little bit lengthy and too long to cover toward the end of the show. I want to point out that the donation button is there at the headonradionetwork.com page. We would appreciate it if you stopped by. The network is attempting to keep the lights on and keep the show streaming. We have gone over 2 years, I think, at this point, without doing that. We have desperately tried not to do that. No one here is attempting to take this money for salary and, you know, candy bars. It is strictly to keep the system running, and we have had a wonderful response, and we appreciate that, and we're so grateful that you love us as much as we love you. We sincerely do appreciate that. Want to take a moment to thank the people who supply music to this show. That would be Glenn Rivera and Daryl in Chicago, also Billy Shears and Cynthia Manley. You can go to the strictlyconfidentialradio.com website, and there you will locate a link that says music heard on the show. You'd be surprised how much of it you can download directly, especially at Glenn's site. Once you can site, just click on Restructure Mixes, and you'll find a huge amount of music there for download. And I'm just grateful to be here and grateful to have you with us. And I hope to hear from more of you folks by telephone. We know you're out there. I'm getting your emails. We know you're out there. We see it in the streaming numbers. I guess you think I'm scary. Is it my outfit? I just don't know what it is. But as time goes by, you'll learn to love me. So, in any case, we'll close the show by saying, here's Cynthia Manley reminding you to...